know that when you have a purpose and a calling on your life, there's nothing that nobody and nothing can happen.
I am Angela C. Wright.
Over the top, the gotcha.
He said your numbers has shrunk. He said, I don't know how, why.
You're not going to get unless you're going to have mounds of security for me because you're not going to get me.
If I wasn't depressed and going through what I was going through, I probably would have never started.
And this episode was brought to you by The Ayers Agency, a full-service marketing firm noted in entertainment and culture. Hey, guys. Welcome to another episode of Break Free. I am your host, Free. And today, I have an extraordinary, I'm going to say young man with me today to come shed a little light on today's the climate control of policing and just really, really knowledgeable. Y'all help me welcome Mr. Bobby Render.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be here. How you doing?
Quite well, if I get for old man, I guess.
I said young man. I see you want to say old.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming today. Thank you for taking the time out to share and to educate us. So I'm going to get right to it. What is a Red Dog?
Red Dog was a street tactical unit that was created back then because crime had gotten to a certain level. It was so high that something had to be done. Mm-hmm. And the impact crime, Chief Elgin Bell, who was our police chief at one time then, came over here, established Red Dog to impact crime because of all the lives that were being taken, the drug war, and a lot of the criminal activity was just at its highest level then.
Yeah.
And we had the impact crime, so that was created.
What does Red Dog mean?
Well, back then was something different. We started to run every drug dealer out of Georgia.
Do y'all hear that? Run every drug dealer out of Georgia. Yeah, so I think most people, you know, because I know myself, I didn't know what Red Dog meant until you told me earlier when we was talking.
When we hit the street, we were told to go out there and be aggressive because people were being killed. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of fear and anxiety out there because of the crime and the violence that was taking place. The Miami boys that come up from Florida, mm-hmm. and they were attacking the drug dealers here. They were taking over the drug trade here. And people were losing their lives because of that.
So it was like a huge war scene.
It was.
Over territory.
People getting killed every night, drug dealers being shot, shootouts, that type of thing. And people lives were at risk.
So were they coming just to take over one particular part of Atlanta, or they was coming?
Drug dealers were establishing a lot of our housing projects. And because of that, when the Miami boys came up, they attacked the drug dealers. They were organized. And they were taking some of the drug dealers out, battling. The drug dealers didn't want to go. So they ended up in shootout and people losing their lives.
So these dudes just thought they was going to come all the way from another state.
Yeah, they were forced to be reckoned with. That's correct.
They were?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what was it that those areas that they wanted just was like really fruitful, must have made a lot of money?
Right. There were a lot of drug dealers. You know, they had a lot of people. They ended up walking up selling drugs because, crack had just hit the street. People were addicted.
So we talking late 80s, early 90s.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And something had to be done.
Yeah.
And people were killing. And so Chief Bell came up with the idea of a Red Dog and to go out and impact crime. We were told to go out there and be aggressive on the police officer. And as he told us before, we were supposed to be the toughest guys on the street, not the drug dealer.
Right.
Right.
Do y'all feel like y'all was the toughest guys on the street?
We did aggressive police officer. But we did it effectively, and then we did it the right way.
Yeah.
Contrary to what people believe now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like because what I will say is y'all did have the fear of God in people. You know, even rappers, you would hear Red Dog, Red Dog, Red Dog. You know, like you didn't want to get caught, but you didn't want the Red Dogs to catch you.
I think a lot of times those rappers thing, they elevate themselves by doing that. A lot of them would say, I remember one time we had a guy that was doing some surveillance on the guys. You know, we had a guy that was hiding, he would watch the drug dealer. Mm-hmm. And they were telling lies about Red Dog was jumping out of helicopters on them and catching them, all kind of crazy stuff. And I'm like, what? But they, they feared Red Dog, but it was a force to be reckoned with, and it had a place in society then.
I mean, you're a pretty boy. You don't seem like you was aggressive at all.
No, I had to, it's just some early days. We had to be tough.
Yeah.
They got some of the best officers out of the zone. Mm-hmm. I think then it was about 65 to 75 people involved. And we were told to go out there, be aggressive, and do what we had to do to save lives.
So it was from they took certain officers from each zone,
and then
came together as one team.
Took tactical training, like some of the SWAT teams, and we helped narcotics serve these warrants on houses because they had to be protected, and we did so, and that's what we were able to do.
Yeah. So do you feel like once the Red Dogs was implemented, was Elgin Bell, was he happy with?
Yeah, I think so because the homicide rate went down.
Okay.
And some of the drug dealing went down. Mm-hmm. You know, because, I mean, you wouldn't believe, they were creative in the drug dealing. They had, what they would do is go into the housing project. Mm-hmm. And the drug dealers, they were impressive. They'd give somebody maybe $100 a day to sell drugs out of their apartment. The next day, they'd be in another apartment. So the community was looking out for them because they took care of the community. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we had to come in. We had to do the right thing, but we did. We did just that. We went into the kids' school. Mm-hmm. We went to community meetings. Mm-hmm. We talked to all the principals and let people know that we cared about them too. We went to career days at our personal kids' school and some of our schools in there. We were there for them.
Yeah, because a lot of times Red Dogs just get a bad rap.
Yeah,
and people don't know that. There was some good, there was good things that y'all did do in a community that really wasn't spoken of on the news.
Yeah, we had that negative connotation that came with it, but see, we had to let people know that we're
not to be played with.
We don't beg you to go to jail now.
Yeah.
You resist, we put you in jail. Mm-hmm. You know, you physically resist, and we have to physically put you in jail.
Yeah.
And when you say you're under arrest, you are under arrest.
Mm-hmm. And so do you feel like, and you can't speak for everybody but yourself, you felt like you was fair?
Our team, we had a good group of guys that were together. We had guys in the military that was in the group. We had one guy that was athletic, he could chase, and we had team leaders too. Mm-hmm. And we had the system we used when we arrested people, it was a lot different. I think we had it down to bed. We had a chase man that would chase the guy. When you see the guys running with the dope, we had a chase guy. We had a cover guy. The cover guy would make sure that nobody attached the chase guy.
Okay.
Then we had the third guy was, we had most time was 3 to 4 guys. The third guy was a report where they were running. Mm-hmm. And the driver of the car, he was directed to get in front of the chase and capture the guy. So we had a system to do what we did.
Yeah. Instead of just like blind.
So we had a system. We talked about it and it meant a lot. And it helped us in a lot of time when we impacted crime.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of just,
out there jumping out on people, jumping out. No, it wasn't more than that. But we saw something. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we got complaints. People would come to us and say, "Officer, they're selling drugs over there. They're doing this or they did that." A lot of the drug dealers were being aggressive and beating up the guys that didn't have the money for the drug.
Okay.
And so a lot of their relatives would come to us and say, "Look, I don't want to be involved, but the guy over there selling drugs, he hurt mm-hmm. my family member.
Harmful to the harmful."
So we went out there and we showed him, he wasn't the biggest bully on the street.
Yeah. Yeah. You bad, but I'm badder. And so what would you say, could you remember a time that was like maybe the worst day on the job for you?
We had an individual that died and we were arrested. I always tell people this, and I didn't talk about it for a long time. Mm-hmm. That was a SWAT team member that was at a location on Metropolitan, and he had advised us that this white male that was driving a car had went off with another black male to acquire some drugs, and mm-hmm. he had to get out where he asked us to go there. And while we were in the area, I think that day it was three of us there that day. And while we were there, we saw the vehicle pull up, same lookout and everything. And when we pulled the vehicle over, well, the driver that had the drug, the passenger had the drug, he went into I guess he was trying to hide the drugs or whatever, but then he came out with a gun. He had a gun. So mm-hmm. I had pulled the driver. I had him on the ground, and I had handcuffed him. And the other guys heard the guys yell, "Weapon, gun." And when we did, we had to scuffle with the guy, and this guy swallowed the drugs. He had a gun. I guess he was trying, I don't know if he was trying to hide the gun or conceal the dope, but he was trying to get rid of the drugs, and he swallowed the drugs. And when he swallowed the drugs, and it's an awful thing, he was trying to digest it, and he got caught in his throat. And he was there, and we had to call the paramedic. But at the end, AIDS had just hit the streets, too. AIDS was out there. We wanted to give him the mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. It wouldn't have worked because it
was lunch.
Airway was there.
But, yeah, it was lunch.
But
was
I remember, we sat there, and I saw him take his last breath. And it was a horrible feeling. You know what I'm saying? He swallowed the drugs.
Yeah, and that stuck with you.
Yeah, we went home that evening, and I remember I got home, and it was on the news, guy dies in custody of the Red Dog members. I was in the paper and everything. When I got home, my neighbors, they were looking at the staring at me and everything. We couldn't say anything because of the incident.
Right.
And then about a week or two later, had an article way in the back of the paper saying, "Officer, we're clear. Guy died of ingestion." And I remember when they got the drugs out of his chest, the paramedics came out, and they were trying to recover the drugs from his throat. Mm-hmm. And they said, "We don't have anything." And I remember they had some type of, tube that they were pulling it out with. They had to go halfway down the stomach. They finally pulled it out. And I remember I photographed the drugs that he had swallowed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was in a bag with about 7 or 8 hits in it. Mm-hmm. And I had to photograph it. And that's why I did my detective work. I had to come up and prove that we were able to show what they did. And that was a bad experience.
Oh, because they were trying to blame y'all.
I didn't want that to be that. We had to prove what he had done and all that.
Yeah.
We had to bless. So, but he had swallowed the drill. And I'm saying, well, you know, it wasn't worth dying over.
But you know, it wasn't where he probably didn't think he was gonna die.
I know, but
when you trying to get away, you do whatever you think you can to get away. You know, yeah. He probably thought he could swallow it and then, but, you know come out in ways.
It was a hard thing to see somebody die over a drug. You
know? Yeah.
But I think that bothered my guy. And when we were off duty, we worked together off duty. We'd go over each other's house and kids, and we eat dinner, and we got a close relationship just for that team itself.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because what I can say too, for as much as people like to say about the Red Dogs, there wasn't a lot of police killing like there is now.
No, we didn't have that. Mm-hmm. I think now, you know, that fear kept people from retaliating. Now people, I've noticed now, and a lot of my colleagues could tell you that that people are more aggressive toward police officers now. Mm-hmm. Now a lot of times police officers, they can't make a stop on a traffic violation. They have to have backup to get there.
Yeah,
and when that happens, somebody might need the police on in an emergency situation, but he's there backing up on somebody on traffic stop, and it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, I know the last week my car was stolen, and I called for them to come out. They told me somebody was coming. It took 6 hours, you know, but I'm thinking they had other stuff to do, or maybe didn't want to send just one car out, because even though somebody's saying something, they just can't trust it. It's just a total different climate now with policing. Yeah.
Is. And people are more aggressive towards police officers mm-hmm. now.
And where do you think that stemmed from? Where do you think it changed?
To be honest with you, I think it's parenting. Mm-hmm. I think it's education. And I think a lot of this stuff is motivated by money. Mm-hmm. I've always believed that. You know, you see lawyers everywhere want to sue. But I tell people, and I should be a police instructor at Atlanta Police Academy. I was an instructor for them. I would tell the recruit that when I take them, that's the only job in your life that you have to. You go to work to protect people, and to lose your life for people that don't care, that hate you.
Yeah.
You protect people that hate you, and I tell them to kiss your loved one goodbye because there's a bullet out there waiting with your name on. You can meet that bullet anytime.
Did on the team? You know, I know y'all was a tight knit family and everything. Did y'all hold each other accountable? Like if you know, like say for example, me and my friends. If my friend does something wrong and we in front of people, I'm not going to say nothing right then. But when we off to ourselves, then I'm going to say, like, you know you was wrong. So did y'all hold each other accountable, like if one seen the other one doing something that was a little too excessive or was doing something they wasn't supposed to do?
Well, my team, two guys on our team, we had gone to local colleges here, mm-hmm. HBCU, mm-hmm. HBCU, we had gone to, and
CAU.
We were pretty good. And we were older. We were one of the older guys in the unit.
Okay.
We treated different, but we did lose one of our members because I think he betrayed us one time. I think from when we were doing the warrant, and he warned the people that we were going to execute the warrant because he knew him. And he lost his job because of that.
How did y'all find out that he had Gator dropped it down that they was coming?
He had made a phone call to warn him, and we do the warrants with a lot of time with DA. We were doing it with DA and some of the federal instructions. They had wiretapped the line, and he made a phone call to the people, and they heard him on the line. And we didn't know about it. We didn't know about it till about three or four weeks later. Mm-hmm. And we were working together, and they called him in one day, and he never came back to the car. And we found out later that what he had done, and it was hurtful because he thought he had betrayed us also because we could have been injured. It wasn't that type of situation, but we could have been injured.
So how did that make y'all feel? Like, what did y'all, you know, how was that? Was that an eye-opener?
You know, he was one of his fraternity brothers. He was one of his fraternity brothers. I guess, you know, he had allegiance to them also, I guess. But like I told him, he wanted me to speak in his behalf after he got fired because he wanted to appeal his hearing. And for about a month, I suffered with trying to get up enough nerve to go in and do it. But then the last day I told him, you know, he called and I said, man, I can't do it because you betrayed the group. And he said he understood. He said he understood. He said, man, I understood. Man, I couldn't speak in his behalf.
Yeah.
It was painful.
Oh, yeah, because it's like it's not a win-win. That's not a win-win situation at all.
Right.
Yeah, do you feel like you were fair? Like, do you feel like was there anybody you wouldn't lock up? Or do you feel like it doesn't matter? You break the law, I got you.
Well, we had a guy in a wheelchair that was selling drugs. Mm-hmm. And we had to sit there and watch him for about a half hour selling drugs. And what he did, he would had the drugs up on the, in the wheelchair, mm-hmm. up on his leg. He would lift his leg up. And we went to arrest him. Everybody thought we were crazy, you know.
Yeah.
And he was saying, y'all, you know, he was yelling, everybody getting attention, you know. And we told him, he said, no, man, we're gonna lock you up. Mm-hmm. So we put him in a wheelchair and laid him down in the wagon and took him to jail.
So you didn't discriminate.
No, we didn't. We you know, there were some people. We gave some people some break. There was a small amount wasn't mm-hmm. to do, but we know we did. But those people found out, they know that we tried to help them. And a lot of times those were the people that were coming. I remember there were incidents where, see, I worked one of the housing projects that we worked in Takewood Homes that day, and okay. I was there for. I worked Takewood Homes for probably about 5 or 6 years before I was put in the Red Dog, and while I was there, that was my second home. I was raised in zone 3, which is Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. the Pittsburgh area, mm-hmm. and I love being a police officer. And I remember when I would get off work when I was a patrolman, and after working Takewood, I had a 69 Camaro. I would pick kids up in Takewood home, take them over to Bedford Pine, and practice baseball. I had to make 3 trips because I had a Camaro, but I would take them over there every day. I would get off work, change clothes, and go over there and coach them in baseball. Mm-hmm. That's how much I love the people. And I remember one incident when we were out there in Takewood, radio came on and said, look, one of the older people in the high rise that we would always go talk to, they said, look, tell Officer Render, that boy on the right have a gun all the time, so be careful. And then those came in to advise over the radio that person could have been armed, and we were able to get the gun off him. Because the lady in the high rise was looking down off the balcony, and she told us about it.
Oh, and then, you know what? So that was her allegiance to you.
Yeah.
For the good that you did.
We would go to high rise, talk to them, and, you know, and they would feed me on the holidays. You know, when I was a rookie officer, I had to work on holidays because I was a new officer. Uh-huh. And we would have to go, and we'd be Thanksgiving dinner, and, I mean, roaches would be all over the walls. and, you know, it's like we just shaking them out of this house. I said, no, I'll take some home with me.
Yeah.
But that's how it was. Mm-hmm. You know, I love what I was doing.
Yeah.
I would have paid them to be, but that's how much I love my job then. Mm-hmm. And I still do.
And you were a police officer for how long?
For Atlanta, 30 years.
30 years?
Yeah.
Oh, so you retired from Atlanta.
Yeah, and I left. I went out into Cobb County. I was a school resource officer in Cobb County for 14 years.
Okay.
I loved it out there.
You did? And then so now you retired altogether.
I probably need therapy because I miss it so much.
Really?
I do. I miss it. I miss the kids in school. I miss the people in the neighborhoods, you know. Mm-hmm.
Just that connection of being.
I tell people all the time, I don't think you can be trained to be a police. I think you have to be born to be a police officer. Mm-hmm. And there are police officers that are good police officers, of good heart, and they're born to do what they do.
Yeah.
And they accept that responsibility. They go out there to protect. And what people don't understand is this: police officers have to make split second decisions that will last them and victims for the rest of their lives. And that's a hell of a decision you have to make.
Yeah.
When it comes to gun and violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's like the dude who lost his life that day. That was a split decision he made. You know, on the other side, you the police officer, and then he's the criminal. But in his head, it's like, I'm not getting caught for these drugs that I have. I'd rather just go to jail for a misdemeanor, and hopefully I could, you know, but split decisions, things does have in the split, you know, in the split of a moment. Were there ever times that you feared for your life?
Yeah. There were some times. There were times that I've gone in places where I got. There was a Johnson. He was one of my partners when I was in Takewood Home. We worked together, and in order to get that car, I worked domestic crash intervention because I worked in a foot beat at first, but all the rookie officers had to work a foot beat. So to get a car,
foot beat is walking around.
Uh-huh. In order to get a car, and my colleagues would tell you, I had to work DCI. I started working DCI. That's domestic crash intervention. We were like social workers. Mm-hmm. There were altercations, and we would go out there, and I hope they have that now. But the Mexican, we would go back, and we would do a follow-up, like a social worker, and make sure they weren't fighting and recommend, make sure that
I don't
type
think
thing.
They do that no more, Mr.
Well, we had that. We had that had going, and that was a lot of times that happened. It really did. Mm-hmm. And there were some dangerous things that came out about that. You know, there were people that were killed and that type thing.
But, I mean, like, okay, so the Red Dogs, y'all wore masks. So did any of the dope boys, did they know who the Red Dogs were?
Well, see, my situation, I was raised in Atlanta all my life.
So they know that's Mr. Bobby.
Right, and I remember even when you first make detective, they put you in narcotics when you first get promoted. I remember I was working Red Dog and the street, and when I had made detective, mm-hmm. I raided this house. we raided this house. I had scattered the first one for the house. And the guy had remembered my face from when I worked Red Dog. and my informant had got me into the house to make a bathroom the guy.
Yeah.
And the guy got ready. They were selling liquor at the house, weed and cocaine. Mm-hmm. And when I went in the house to make the bath, the houseman, he said, you look familiar. And I'm going to hope that he didn't, you look familiar. Mm-hmm. But he took me on back, and I bought some weed from him, I bought crack, and I bought some liquor from him. It was on a Sunday, too, so he wasn't supposed to be selling that kind on Sunday. And when we went back with the warrant to raid the house, mm-hmm. he had shut down. And I found out about 2 weeks later, after we had hit him again, that he recognized where I was, and he shut it down.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But,
wow.
But he said, I learned a lot of things from them. A lot of times, the housemen and the guys that run the houses, mm-hmm. they gave us information. Because some of the guys that ran the illegal gambling houses, some of the guys on the street were attacking their customers and taking the money from them.
Some of the dope boys was right. attacking the gamblers.
And some of the Miami boys were doing that also. They mm-hmm. were coming up. And what they would do is they would tell us, they're robbing my client. And the houseman normally, they would rob them. They came and told them, look, I don't want to be a part of it, but these guys right here, these are what these guys are doing. And they're robbing us too. They were like nonviolent crime. They would come in, but they were coming robbing and their workers and stuff. It was rough.
Yeah,
it was. So we got a lot of information from those guys too.
Yeah, so basically they wanted to keep them off of them, so they would put y'all exactly. onto them. Yeah,
yeah, and that happened a lot. A lot of those because they wanted to keep their community. They were accepted in their community, but they were losing customers. And people were getting killed and robbed because of that crime out there.
What was the crime rate back then? Like the especially the homicide, was the murder rate high?
It was extremely high then because of the Batman boys and the conflict they were having with the local drug dealer. It was shooting and killing, and it was organized. It was an organized crime. Mm-hmm. We treated it as organized crime because they were going to certain locations trying to take over the drug trade. Then they had lookouts. They had people that looked out and people that they identified, and it was about money. It was about money. Man, boy, they came through a lot of money, and they were organized.
Yeah, and then were you still the Red Dog when, like, Hurricane Katrina hit, and then, like, the New Orleans boys came up here? Because that was another bloody summer, where it was like, were you still on the force then?
Yeah, we were talking about that. Mm-hmm. It was a big, a lot of people claim that when people from Louisiana came up, they brought a lot of crime with them, mm-hmm. a lot of organized stuff with them. And we did. A lot of people came. They were homeless. A lot of them didn't have jobs, and they didn't have, places to go. So a lot of them were homeless. And there were a lot of criminals came up, too. So that had to be dealt with, too. Mm-hmm. So, it just
Yeah, because I remember that. I remember because it's more, out the 80s and 90s, I wasn't
right,
in Atlanta.
When the people in Louisiana came up, New Orleans, they brought the crime with them. Mm-hmm. They brought the crime with them.
Yeah, they thought they was coming to take over, too.
It was elevated. Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. Yep. So, because now, what do we have? The murder rate right now, we have a high homicide rate.
It's one of the highest in the nation. And I did the research the other day because of the homicide. If you notice in the news lately, we've been having a lot of, even in parts of town, we've never had homicide.
Right.
Shootings and robberies now. And people are more aggressive when it comes to firearms and weapons. They're solving their problem by shooting each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, too, do you notice that it's the generation, it has gotten younger? Before, it was mostly like, 20-year-olds and, 30, in your 20s, mid-20s and stuff like that. But now we have kids that's 13 and 14, years old.
I remember when we would go out to the school sometimes. Mm-hmm. And even when I was a school resource officer, I have had some of the detectives come in from Atlanta that I knew earlier, and they would come out and talk about crime and what they were doing. A lot of kids, the first thing they ask you, what type of gun do you have? What size gun is that, officer running? What are we doing? And I said, no, don't ask about a gun. Don't touch a gun. And what I would do, they'd be out looking at the gun. And I'd be talking, I'd go, boom! And everybody would jump. I said, that's how long it takes to die.
Yeah.
And everybody would jump. And I said, no, don't touch a gun. So we never showed guns. We never even talked about guns. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that being that guns are more easily accessible now, do you think that plays a part in the crime rate that we have?
Some of my closest friends, we talked about that. Mm-hmm. Everybody now in the state of Georgia can carry a gun.
Except for me, because I'm a felon.
But see, like I tell people, now the criminals, they know that everybody's carrying a gun. Where are your guns? In your houses, in your homes, in your car. So now they have more access to them, too.
Yeah.
Because all they have to do is break in your car. You see the organized robbers they got going on now, the organized burglars they got going. The young people now are organized. Some of them are younger, too. Everybody looking for a gun, wants a gun. And They're out there, they're accessible, and they're taking advantage of them being there.
And what do you think that we as a community, as not just a community, as a people, as a whole, you know, what do you think that we need to do to try to combat the homicide with the youth?
What I did when I was in the school system, I had a parent group called COPS, Concerned Observing Parents in School. I made School Resource Officer of the Year because of my program that I was running. And I brought parents in off the street, and we talked. What I did, and I recommend this to a lot of the other police agencies, we did role playing. Mm-hmm. What I would do is I would tell the procedure that what a police has to go to when he pulls the car over. I say, you run it, you get the tag. Notify where you're pulling them over at, the tag and the type of vehicle you're pulling over and the tag number. And you let the radio know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I said, once that happens, you get out of your car and you ask the guy for his driver's license insurance. What I would do, I would play the role of the driver. I'd let them be the police officer. I'd give them the badge and the hat. They would come to the car, and they would tell me to roll down my window. I pick up a gun, boom, boom. I said, I shot you. I said, I could be a murderer. I could have a body in the trunk of my car right now. I could just rob the bank. When I walk up to your car, I could shoot you. They said they never thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. And we would do that. And then I would ask, well, she's like, why you want to see my license? You just stop me because I'm black?
Yeah.
We would go through all this.
Yeah.
They said, I never knew. It was like, yeah, when you stop a vehicle, mm-hmm. you don't know what that person has done. Well, they just created a murder somewhere, or just robbed a bank. So you have to be careful. And when people started resisting, you have to go to another level. Mm-hmm. It's not that you're out there to harm people, because it's not that way.
No,
that's a misconception that people have.
Yeah, it is. But sometimes some officers, not all officers, you know, I do feel like there's certain situations that can be handled different. And I do understand that some people, what I realize is sometimes I remember seeing where this officer had pulled his man over. He was just scared of the man. You get what I'm saying? So when fear sets in, he was scared. He felt like he couldn't, you know, once the man got aggressive with him, that made him scared. That made put him on D. So he automatically started shooting. And, you know, like you said, those split decision moments and then fear. Fear paralyzes. Yeah. Fear make you do things that you normally wouldn't do.
The incident I was saying was this, I didn't go into detail. The officer that when we were working at the housing project, we were working together. Mm-hmm. And we would go to all the recreation centers and school I was telling you about. And one day we saw the vacant apartment. The whole building was vacant. And we saw someone going into this apartment. Mm-hmm. So I had my backup. He was already there with me. So we chose to go and search the apartment. Well, as we searched the apartment, we did it as safely as we could. And we thought we had cleared the apartment. But evidently we missed one of the rooms. And I remember, so clear, this female jumped out behind us. I give up. My partner had the gun to her head just like that, and it scared him. I jumped. If he had pulled that trigger after she had frightened him from jumping out in the closet, mm-hmm. our lives would have been ruined. We'd have been ruined for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
And sometimes we discuss that now. If he had pulled that trigger in fear or she had frightened him, I would have lost everything, and he would have lost everything.
Yeah.
And so that's something you're in situations like that. Mm-hmm. But the general public doesn't know about those situations.
Yeah, we only see what makes the news.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think we're in a defense mode now where we have to defend everything that we do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's compromised our effectiveness in law enforcement, because we got to let the general public know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we're doing it. And what that does, it stops us from really doing our job. When I was a detective, and a lot of my friends were detectives, we used the news media to help us to solve crime. Mm-hmm. The victim. We got show photographs. Say, if you've seen this guy, give us a call. Give out our cards. Now we have to explain each and everything we do. I think a lot of times it makes our job more difficult, mm-hmm. because we have to explain each and everything we do and compromise the investigation sometimes.
But do you feel like that has came as a result of the bad apples that are in the bunch?
Yeah. The majority of police officers out here that wouldn't lay their lives on the line to protect life and property, mm-hmm. they are good police officers. Mm-hmm. They are few. You know, you're going to find some bad ones.
That's in
anything you do. You're going to find corrupt police officers doing the wrong thing. And they make bad decisions. But the problem is they are good police officers that go after these guys. Mm-hmm. And they pay a price for what they do.
Yeah.
Together, we know, we came and started working together. And it was like complete opposite, but we got to be best friends.
Yeah.
He's a lawyer now. He's a retired lawyer now. And what is it? Well, I'd say he was. In Florida now. He's retired in Florida.
And this episode was brought to you by The Ayers Agency, a full-service marketing firm noted in entertainment and culture. So tell me, Was there a time, do you feel like you were a biased officer? Or
no way. We were always consistent in what we did. You know, we didn't do that. Mm-hmm. If you commit a crime, we lock you up.
Yeah.
We came after you. Mm-hmm. If you resist, we put you in jail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you wasn't biased at all?
No, it was an incident. Time back, I arrested my brother. My youngest brother, I arrested my brother. Crack had just first hit the street. He had started using crack. He was addicted. Mm-hmm. And I remember my mother called me, and we were working. And she called me. She said, Bobby, Bud is his name, because I don't mind telling you that. She said, Bud just came here. She worked from 3 to 11 at Nabisco. Mm-hmm. And if she went to work at 3, she forgot something. She had to go back to the house and get it. When she got back, my youngest brother was stealing stuff out of the garage from the house. And he and some other guy was taking out the back door through the garage door, going out. And she called me. My mother was upset. So that time, my Red Dog Unit and myself, we went over there. And my mother was upset. I went to one of the guys' house he went to at first, and they told me. So I put the word out.
Mm-hmm.
Until my mother's stuff come back, they weren't going to sell not one weed, seed of weed over there.
Yeah.
My mother's stuff come back.
Right.
We trolled over there about a week or two. Mm-hmm. We shut it down. So they would come notify me for my mother, the jack he had stolen from there and the other stuff again. I got everything back to my mother's flowers he had sold off the front porch.
Uh-huh.
And the people, they were glad to tell us back. Then we got all of the stuff back because of that. And I kept people. I locked my brother up. Well, I kept back putting you in jail.
That's what I'm saying. So what did your brother think about you locking him up?
Well, years later, he got out of jail because I locked him up. But what we did, I sent him to rehab. I talked, I was familiar with the judges and the judges. We knew people, and even when we went to court in Tedwood, I would do that. The judge sent him off to rehab, and he's supposed to be for 6 months, but he ended up staying a year. Mm-hmm. And when he came back, he was straight. And
he was clean.
And to this day, he think that he owed me for saving his life.
I was about to say, in hindsight, he looks at it and saved his life.
During that same period of time, he had gotten some drugs from a weed or something from some drug boys they had him selling. And I know my mother found it in his room, and she flushed it. She said, Bobby, I thought this stuff looked like grass or something. I pulled it down, a whole big old bag of dope.
Mm.
And evidently he couldn't pay him for it, so the drug boys, I guess they had beat him up on the street and took his vehicle and threw it out in my mother's driveway.
Mm.
So that's when we went in Tedwood. We left Tedwood, went over there and did our job over there and cleaned that up and got it. But he thanked me today for saving him. He does.
Yeah, but when he first happened, I know he was cussing you out.
I mean, we went to court. Mm-hmm. I admired him for this because the judge was there. And the judge was like, who we got? Officer Render. I said, we got, who's the victim? I said, my mother, Mary Render. The judge looked at me. He said, who's the defense? I said, Bird Render. I said, that's my youngest brother. That's my mother. But he admitted what he had done and the judge sent him off. So it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out.
And my mother today said, we saved him. We saved him by doing that because he said that somebody probably killed him.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, doing raids, was there ever a time you were shocked to see somebody that was maybe in a drug house?
Yeah, we were in Tedwood. Mm-hmm. And we had, I guess, working narcotics or something then. But we had raided the house. And we had about 7-8 people in the house. So we're counting people, we charge them as they come out, putting cuffs on. And the last person come out, this guy, I'm looking at him, he got a call on. Mm-hmm. He's a minister. And I said, Pastor, what are you doing in the drug house? He said, Lord, singing is a strange place to do his bidding.
Uh-huh.
I said, Jerry, well, you finna sing to jail today, I'm locking you up. But you find people there with, when crack first hit, mm-hmm. there were professional people that were there. They were coming out there, coming into the house, just about drugs. It was awful.
Yeah. And so basically you had a reputation. They knew. Bobby going to lock you up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Bobby going to lock you up. Ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
And even when my old neighbor, see, I grew up in my neighborhood, so I had to do what was right. My mother, I was raised by a strong black woman.
Right.
My mother and father got divorced when I was like in middle school. Mm. My mother raised us. She put, out of the six kids, she put 5 of us through college, except for Bud. We went to college. Bud went to jail.
Yeah.
But
five out of 6 is good.
I attribute her all the goodness, everything we did good, everything to a strong black woman that raised us, and she did a good job. And today, yeah. I still everything I am today that's positive. It came from her.
Oh, that's a blessing. Yeah. That's truly a blessing. Now, you know, there was wild stories about the about the red dogs, like the one you said where they was jumping out of helicopters. Were any of those stories true?
We had some. The drug dealers had lookouts.
Right.
Half of them were junkies. They would stay there 24 hours a day looking out for police to tell them that we were coming. Mm-hmm. And they would get a dope for that.
Yeah.
So we had to be creative in how we went in. So we had to be creative. A lot of times, we would get on model buses. Uh-huh. We'd get on model buses. Two or three get on model buses. And when model buses go, we would jump off the bus and arrest the guys. That's how we get in.
Yeah. How would they be looking when y'all jumped off the bus?
Surprise. We would do that. A lot of times, I remember when we would drive cabs. Mm-hmm. We would get borrowed cabs. A lot of times, the cab driver was driving. Before we would impound the car, we would drive it in the neighborhood. We would jump out the car. They thought we were cab drivers. You know, we had several plainclothes guys that worked in the unit also. Their job was to go in there and to buy the drugs and if they could. We had plainclothes guys that acted if they would buy the drugs too. And they would point us to the houses, and we did that also.
Yeah. What would you say that we need to do more of today?
Parenting. I think parenting, and we need the police officers can't do the job by themselves. We need the community to support law enforcement. We are here to protect and to serve. Mm-hmm. How, this is my own opinion now, how can you not want a training facility that's going to train police officers to protect you and a fire department to save you from fires, to teach you how to be better police officers?
But how do you feel like law enforcement can help the community gain their trust back?
By making a collaborative effort between both, working together. Mm-hmm. The officers doing like I did, go out there, be a part of the community. We went to school. I knew the principals on my beat. I knew the people at the recreation center. I would go there and play pool with the kids in the recreation center. Go to school on career day. Interact with people. Show them that there's a side of police officers. You know, we're not negative people out there in the street. We're positive people. We're a positive role model for these kids.
Right.
Career day. Police officers need to do that. They need to interact. Police officers need to get out of the cars and get out there and know the people. And hopefully that's what they're going to be doing. And they'll be accepted more in the community.
Because I remember in school coming up, there was career day. And a lot of times kids, you know, when the kindergarten teacher or first grade asks you what you want to be, a lot of people do say police officers, but you don't hear kids say that anymore.
Now, we would go out there, and I remember our red dog, we went to a career day once, and then the kids were glad to see us. And what we would do, we would give them our police radios, and we tell the radio dispatcher, they say, you know, to just talk back to the kids on radio. Uh-huh. And we say, radio check. And the kids get ready to say, radio check, and they go to spell, and they love that.
Yeah.
But those are how you build a rapport with kids.
Yeah, touch their heart.
And you did that. You have to do that now. And yeah. I don't know what is happening now, but also education. Mm-hmm. I always say that an educated man is less likely to go to jail than an uneducated one. We have to educate our kids.
We do. Yeah. We do, yeah. That I always say there needs to be more education and less incarceration.
Exactly.
Yeah, because a lot of time it's just ignorance, you know, and a lot of things can be avoided. Now, you know, along with the myths, there was times that they said y'all would do stuff like when y'all raid the dice game and stuff. And while y'all chasing them, y'all would let the kids take the money and keep the money. Would y'all let them keep the money?
Yeah, what we would do is when we go out to schools, we would tell them we had a red dog bar. Mm-hmm. We tell them, you know, red dog, woof, woof, woof. That's red dog when they would see us. So when kids see red dog, they start barking.
Uh-huh.
So we know it's a lot of the dope boys were gambling.
Yeah.
So we said what we would do is we need to find out what they were gambling or whatever. So the kids would see us. They would go like, red dog, woof, 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 woof. And we just about to chase them. They go and get all the money.
Yeah.
So the kids, they were helping us. They were helping us point out. And it was fun. Then we leave all the money out. Some of them got a good bit of money.
Good bit of money, yeah.
And I remember one incident we were at McDaniel Glen Apartments on McDaniel Glen. Mm-hmm. And one of the kids got his head caught between the railing. And he was trapped. They went for the fire department to get him out. And my team members and I, we freed him. We had to stretch and strain and got his head out of there. And the parents, they were so grateful. They remember, they said, aren't you running from, I said, yeah, Pittsburgh, because I had gone to school with some of the people there.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, to me, it was an advantage because I grew up in the neighborhood. I went to school here and made a difference. Now, I think it was difficult for some of the people that came from outside of the area, mm-hmm. that came here because they They didn't know
trust them. They didn't know. Yeah.
That's what it was. That's
yeah.
It was.
They didn't trust them. But like you said, I do believe if they were to be back in the community and not just, you know, police, but try to build a relationship,
it would really impact.
It would make a difference.
It would be a positive thing they could do. You know, and I wish that would happen. I'd like to see more police officers in the neighborhood. But now, you know, we're short of police officers everywhere.
Maybe you could start a group, you know, and you give them some of that old school flavor that y'all used to use.
Well, my friend and I, my neighbor, he's my best friend, he worked homicide. And we were talking about maybe getting a group now because, you know, and maybe getting with some young kids. We had them when they were younger.
Yeah.
Because he was in the schools, he had groups that he did. And I also, we're talking about getting some of the young men now, you know, young guys in the 20s and 30s, and say, look, this is, we need a positive role model in our neighborhood. And you guys could do some of the things that we did.
Yeah.
It might save our kids.
Yeah, and then even also, like, reaching out maybe to, like, the commissioner and them when they have the training and stuff, maybe they can have experienced men who was there, who lived through that era and was successful with, you know, not so many police killings. Because y'all still got the job done without killing people.
We have every month, the last Saturday in every month, we have a meeting where all the retired officers come together. Mm-hmm. The virus broke it up, but I started going. My neighbor, my best friend, he got me to start going to some of the meetings. And sort of all the retired officers come together. And we're losing a lot of them now. A lot of them are passing on. But some of the young guys are coming down. They were talking about, too, about coming and addressing some of the kids in the academy, the police academy, and talking to them about, you know, the type of image they should have. And you know, because policing, like I said, it's a job I think you should be born for.
Yeah,
and they should know how important it is to be a part of the community. I think that would probably enhance the police force also.
Okay, before you go, this is the last question, part of the podcast. Tell me something that Mr. Bobby feel like he needs to break free from.
Okay. After all these years of policing, that's all I ever did.
Yeah.
And I noticed when I retired about a couple of years ago, I think I need therapy because I was always used to doing for people. And now I think what's happening now, I see a lot of the crime that's happening now. I see a lot of the people happening now, and it really bothers me. But I want to make a difference. So what I did was I started doing this food giveaway thing. I do it twice a week on Mondays and Wednesdays.
Okay.
I go and I purchase this food at a real low price with one of my detective partners that worked with me when I worked in intelligence organized crime. And I go out and I give it out in the community now.
Okay.
And I do that twice a week and we've done some great things, and my neighbors, I've done things for them. I go out to my wife's church, and we do things at the church, and it's been nice. It's been nice, and I get some gratification from that, and it's working out for me.
Okay, all right. I thank you again for coming here today.
Thank you for having me.
Got me to sit down with a red. They got me to sit down with a red dog. Now, you know, I was on the other end of that. So, you know, this had to be ordained, y'all.
Remember, that's some great police officers. Majority police officers, that's a good police officer. And we want to do good things. So go out there, talk to your police officers. You know,
get to know them.
Yeah, we need the community. We need them. We need them.
We do. Well, y'all, there you have it. Another exceptional episode, just learning the history of the Red Dog, what it means, and, you know, there's proof that there are still some good officers. Remember, it's always delusion until you see it happen. I'll see y'all next time. And this episode was brought to you by The Ayers Agency, a full-service marketing firm noted in entertainment and culture.